I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder. Welcome to tonight's edition of Mind Over Matter, a monthly Monday evening radio show that is dedicated to informing Southeast Alaska K2 listeners about a myriad of psychological and social issues confronting us in our daily lives, and ultimately about living our lives with more awareness and greater happiness. We all have had conflicts with family, friends, or with folks in the workplace. Some of these conflicts may have been petty, or they may have seemed insurmountable at the time. Perhaps you have had conflicts that have never been resolved. Well, depending on the families we grew up in, or the cultures we were raised in, conflicts with others may have created major disruptions in our lives. We might be conflict avoiders, fearful of bringing up problems, afraid of confrontation. If only there was a technique that we could learn that would help us resolve conflicts with people more effectively. And guess what? Maybe there is. In the studio with me tonight is Alex Pastorino, a specialist in mediation who has worked in schools and organizations teaching conflict resolution skills. Welcome, Alex.
Hello, Elaine.
Yeah. Hey, I'm really, really glad to have you here. And before each show, I like to take my guests out, my future guests out for lunch. And Alex and I went out to lunch a couple of days ago, and I discovered that she has Southeast Alaskan roots. So where are you from?
Well, I'm originally from Washington State, but I came to Alaska, I think it was 1968, with my mom. We came to visit family in Wrangell, my grandfather's Tlingit.
Uh-huh.
And my mom grew up in Wrangell until she was about 13 years old, and left Wrangell because my grandparents divorced, and so then she went to Washington.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, have you spent much time when you were a kid? Did you spend much time in Wrangell or in Southeast Alaska?
I didn't. I came back to Juneau a year after my mother and I visited family in Wrangell, and I came directly to Juneau.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. But yeah. You've also lived in other parts of Alaska, right?
Yeah. I've lived, I would say, 21 years in Juneau off and on, 15
wow.
years in Anchorage, and 1 year in Kodiak where I taught my first year of high school.
Okay. So tonight we're going to talk about your main career direction, your main professional direction. And so I'm curious, how did you become interested in conflict resolution? Where did it begin?
Well, I took a leave from the University of Alaska Southeast. I was teaching in the business department and thought that, well, you know, if I'm going to be an effective business teacher, I need to go get some business experience. Well, instead of business experience, I ended up with mediation experience and social services. So my first sort of experience with mediation was with community boards. And community boards is in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's a program where they train volunteers to do mediations with community people.
Mm.
People in conflict, neighbors,
mm.
landlord-tenant,
wow.
Whoever. But then, after my experience with community boards, I helped my husband, Ray, with his dissertation. And he was, at that time, doing research at a school in Contra Costa County, California, with a group of high school kids from Mount Diablo High School. And his idea was to do research based on a user perspective. Most of the research in the mediation field is all about mediators and the skills of the mediators. Well, he wanted to know, what was it that people experienced when they actually went through the mediation process?
Mm-hmm.
So he worked with 10 kids from Mount Diablo High School who had been through mediation at least 3 times and some more to design a model of what the mediation process was all about. And so those kids did an amazing job. And based on that model, I developed this a model for to use with peer mediators in schools. And the model is different than other models because the main point or the key or the core of the mediation process is what the kids called resolution.
Is this what they said, what it was all about to them?
Yeah, this is what they said it was all about. Their experience was that it had nothing to do with making agreements. It had nothing to do with any position that they came in with, any idea of what they thought they wanted.
Oh.
Once they started talking with the other person, and once they trusted the other person,
mm-hmm.
and once they started realizing common ground, they said they were sort of on the same wavelength. And what that meant to them was resolution. So once they hit that point in the mediation process, they had already resolved their conflict. It had nothing to do with the agreement that they might make.
Or getting what they wanted.
It didn't matter anymore. The agreements just became secondary to what they defined as resolution. So the model that I've been working with for years is this model with this core concept about resolution, and really what it has to do with is relationship and connection.
Relationship and connection. So how does that work? I mean, how do you do it? How do you get relationship and connection through this model?
Well, there are a number of stages that we go through.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. the first stage is creating safety. And in that stage, the mediation process is introduced and actual ground rules are set up. And examples of ground rules might be no interrupting, or be honest, or agree to solve the problem until it is fair for all people. And that really became my most important ground rule, was that they hung in there with me as long as it took so that they would come out feeling like a winner, everybody feeling like a winner. And, of course, the confidentiality rule. I have a short story if you'd like to hear.
I would love to hear it, yeah.
I was introducing the whole idea of peer mediation to a group of kids who had been selected to be peer mediators. And I was demonstrating a role play. And a child, a little boy, I think he was in third grade, he raised his hand after I was done, and he said, what if they don't keep the agreements? What if they don't agree?
Mm.
And I looked at him and I said, do you think you can role play that kid? Because I knew he was that kid. So he, he can role play that. He could do a good job. So he came up and I said, okay, now remember, you're going to really give me a hard time, right? And he said, yeah, he was going to do that. And so I asked him if he could agree. I don't know if it was interrupt or one of the ground rules. And he kind of looked at me and shrugged his shoulders, and I said, well, is that a yes or a no? You know, and he just kind of hemmed and hawed and finally said, no, I don't know. It depends on the other person. And I, you know, explained to him that I would make sure that the other person agreed to the ground rules too, but right now I needed for him to agree. And he said, no, he didn't think he could agree. So I looked at him and I said, you know, that's okay. I respect your decision. And then silence. And I said, well, you can go sit down now. Actually, let me back up just for one second. Before I told him to go sit down, I said to him, you know, that's great. That's fine, you know, but if you want to come back to mediation at another point, or if you would like to mediate this one maybe later, we would be glad to help you. But we can't do mediation unless everyone agrees to the ground rules. And then he went and sat down, and I just moved on with my training. Pretty soon this little hand goes up, and he's just waving his little hand, and his principal, by the way, is standing right behind him. And this is one of the children who was in trouble a lot. And his question for me was, well, he says, if you're flunking art, can you still be a peer mediator? And I knew at that point that I hooked him because nobody had respected his choice before and allowed him to have it and allowed him to actually have an awareness of, well, this is something maybe I want to do and really create a and really have a choice.
Cool.
Yeah.
Would you continue on? I'd like to hear more. What I'd like to do is get the overview, what the process is like. And is this a process, Alex, that you can use with adults as well as kids?
Yeah. Yes.
And is this a process that you need somebody to guide the mediation? There has to be a facilitator?
Yes, there's a mediator.
There is a mediator.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So the mediator is guiding it, and this is the protocol for doing the mediation. Okay, go. Tell us.
Yes. So the first stage is creating safety with the ground rules and getting agreements to rules. The second stage is helping the parties tell their stories. So that's when the mediator hears both sides and, you know, listens and acknowledges and clarifies and really identifies what the issues are. And really the focus is on needs. It's a needs-based focus.
What does that mean, needs?
That means we all have needs. They're universal. You know, we have a need to be accepted, and I think, you know, for these kids, that's a huge need. You know, we have a need for love. We have a need to be accepted. We have a need for food. There's a lot of needs that we might have, and what we're looking at is not positions, not what they come in with, this is what I want and have to have. We're looking at what are the needs underlying both positions.
So you're really the mediator is in a way being a psychologist because they're looking deeper. Now, are you talking about universal needs, like the need to be liked? Because you mentioned that. With kids, that's huge.
It's big.
The need to be liked.
Yeah.
So are you assuming that underneath everybody, there's the same needs, the need to be accepted, the need to be liked? Or are you looking at different individuals and seeing different needs?
Well, you know, different individuals have different needs. But with kids, you know, with kids in schools, and that's where I've done most of my mediations, the need to be liked and the need to be accepted for who they are is really, really important.
Okay.
So it comes out a lot. You know,
yeah.
it just does.
I can understand that.
And then there are needs because a lot of different things come out in these mediations. You know, my dad was in jail. My mom is dying of a terminal illness. My parents are divorcing. You know, there's a lot of these issues. The need might be for safety or the need might be just to be heard.
To be heard or be included.
Be included.
So even though one kid may be mad at another kid for certain thing, it may be that he felt excluded to have him during the mediation, the need that could be met would that he and the other person, he would feel the other person accepted him.
Yes, or understood him.
Or understood him.
Accepted him or understood him, really heard him.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So telling their stories is really important, you know, just listening to the stories. But then stage three is the stage that's different from most mediation models. And it's in this model, it's the resolution stage. This is the empathy stage. This is the mediator, in a way, just through facilitation and stimulating those growing frontal lobes of children, is helping the parties empathize. And so they're really learning empathy skills. It's really the transformative part of the mediation process. Something happens at this stage when the mediator is helping them to really understand the other person. And here again, we're at the needs level, really understanding what's going on.
The real need.
The real need.
The need to be respected, the need to be liked.
Right.
To feel included, whatever it may be.
Right, exactly. So at some point in this process, there's a shift. And the shift is, the kids called it being on the same wavelengths. That's sort of the whole resolution thing. There's a shift. There's something that happens magically at this point in the mediation where the mediator's job is virtually done. At that point, I as a mediator can just sit back and listen to the kids talk it out, and they can do it themselves at this point. Now and then, the mediator might pop back in to keep them focused, but pretty much the kids are empowered, and they're handling their own problem by this time. So this is a really powerful stage. It is the connection stage. So relationship is really important in this model. Just sort of nurturing that relationship and getting that connection so that they can really talk about their needs. And then the last stage is developing agreements. And this stage really is very easy. It just sort of happens. Anything that they thought they wanted has now gone by the wayside. They no longer really want what they came in with. Now they want what's best for both people. And sometimes in the research, one of the solutions and agreements was just happy. But, you know.
Was just what?
Happy.
Happy.
That's it. We're happy.
Oh.
Nothing else mattered anymore.
Oh.
But, you know, it's different. It's different for all kids. And we still write agreements and get signatures if they're not for younger kids, but for older kids. And I think in our culture, with all of our problem solving modalities, is that there's a potential to move way too quickly from storytelling and empathizing to solutions or agreements. And what happens when you move too quickly, that magical stuff that can happen during the mediation process doesn't happen.
So, like, there's an impatience. I would think that from my experience seeing group facilitation, I've never observed mediation, but I've observed group therapy among, you know, done by pros. And I would think during stage three, particularly, the mediator would have to be very sensitive and very skillful to bring this transformation out. I don't think it's a piece of cake.
No. It takes skill.
And so where do you learn the skill?
Well, I've had a lot of mediation training. I started with the community boards, and then
community
boards with the volunteer mediation,
okay.
And then after Ray's research, then I was really interested. And then I was trained as a professional mediator. And
where'd you get that training?
I got some of that training in Oregon and some of that training in Iowa.
So was it at universities, or is it academically based, or some institute where you get the training?
There are
workshops.
Professional mediation conferences where if you spend so many hours, you get your professional mediation degree. And you need so many trainings and so many hours to get your licensed professional mediator license.
Mm-hmm.
So I did all of that, took some cross-cultural training, and then worked with the Iowa Peace Institute. The goal at that point for the Iowa Peace Institute was to offer every school in the state of Iowa an alternative choice for dispute resolution. And so I was brought in as one of the trainers for that. And we did various kinds of training. We did peer mediation training was a big one. That's what a lot of buildings wanted. Mm-hmm. But we also trained in a whole variety of conflict resolution curriculums. It depended on what the building wanted. It was whatever they chose was what we went in with and gave them.
There are different types of there's terminology for different types of mediation. You already used the term peer mediation. You used maybe interest-based mediation versus agreement-based mediation. Could you kind of explain that?
Well, peer mediation is just mediation with students are the student mediators, and they're helping kids solve their problems.
Okay.
And they're a third party. The mediator is a third party.
But they're students. They're not adults.
They're students. Or peers could be, my husband Ray has done peer mediation with nurses at Providence Hospital in Anchorage. So peers are peers at whatever age they are.
So if it's nurses, a nurse is doing the facilitation.
That's right. Agreement-based mediations, which is not what I do, really, they're focused on getting a win-win solution for the parties, but it's really when a relationship is not at issue. So if they're not going to have a long-term relationship with the person and they just want to get in, have an agreement, and get out, then that's agreement-based.
Now, when lawyers are trained as mediators, are they doing agreement-based?
Some are doing agreement-based and some are doing interest-based. It depends on the lawyer and what they want to be trained in. Divorce mediation, obviously that's a relationship that's going to continue if the two have children, because they're going to continue parenting together. So a relationship-based or an interest-based mediation at that point would be much more effective than an agreement-based, because if you did an agreement-based with divorced parties, I really do think that the whole agreements would be undermined, because you wouldn't really be getting to the needs. And in divorce mediation, you're really looking at the needs of the children and what is in the best interest of the children. So relationship or interest-based mediations, and now there's transformative mediations. The mediation model that I use is an example of a transformative process, and there are a lot of transformative processes out there. This is the only one I believe that has a stage with actually defines resolution as the core of the mediation that has nothing to do with agreements. But what transformative mediations do is really what the magic does in this mediation model. It's just amazing. And for little kids, for kids in elementary school, I mean, we really are helping their little brains grow. We really are stimulating that frontal lobe. And kids who come back, so kids with special needs or kids who are in trouble all the time, those kids who keep coming back repeatedly and over for mediations, where someone might say they're not getting it, you know, why do they have to keep going back? I say the more they come back, the more we are rewiring their brain.
Rewiring them.
We're rewiring them.
Sure.
And what we're rewiring them for is, one, impulse control, two, problem solving and collaboration skills, and, you know, tolerance, accepting difference. So we're really wiring them with a larger perspective.
This sounds like some marriage counseling I do. Because sometimes if you come from a violent family where there was no good role modeling of conflict resolution between husband and wife or parents and children, you grow up believing that fighting is really, or that disagreements, I should say, disagreements are imperil your marriage, or are going to lead to yelling and bad vibes. So you have a choice. You can either shut down and avoid all conflict, or act out what your parents did. So I frequently find that in marriages that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm doing in that case is training on conflict resolution. And I often use the Marshall Rosenberg model of nonviolent communication. And what do you think of that model, and how does it fit into your conflict resolution?
Well, I'm a big fan of nonviolent communication and Marshall Rosenberg as well. So sad that he passed away this past year.
Mm-hmm.
This mediation model that I use, it is nonviolent communication. That's exactly what it is. It's needs-based and focused, and it's all about everything that Marshall Rosenberg teaches. So, yes.
It really is.
Yes.
And in a larger group. I think this would be a very good time to take a short break. And if you're just joining us now, my guest is Alex Pastorino. a specialist in conflict mediation who's worked extensively in school and organizational settings. So we'll take a short music break and be right back to talk more about resolving interpersonal conflicts. And olé, Welcome back to Mind Over Matter. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and with me in the studio is Alex Pastorino, a Junoite, a mediation specialist who, along with her husband, Dr. Ray Pastorino, has developed a model for conflict resolution. And we've just been talking about the four steps, the protocol that the Pastorinos use for conflict resolution. So some of our listeners have just tuned in. If you could go over the four steps briefly and then give some examples so we understand, especially step three.
Okay, sure. I would love to. There are four stages. And the first stage is creating safety. In other mediation models, it's called introduction and ground rules. Mm-hmm. In our model, we call it creating safety because I really like to focus on what's happening at that stage. And without the safety, there is no mediation or collaboration. Stage two is helping parties tell
And creating safety, but confidentiality, no interrupting. Yeah.
Exactly.
Good.
Agree to solve the problem until it's fair for all people. So,
okay.
And also in that stage, you know, if someone else has a rule that they need, the rules are, mediators can use whatever rules they want. And if the parties want different rules, they can also participate in creating those rules. Stage two in our model is helping parties tell their stories. In other models, it's defining the problem and identifying underlying needs.
Okay.
I just think there's such a power in stories, people's stories, and so it's hard to refute a story. And so we go with the telling stories.
And then the skillful mediator helps the person express the story, so they draw them out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and stage three is the core of the mediation process. It's resolving the conflict. It's the stage where connection happens. It's a relationship enhancing section. It's the section where empathy is built.
Mm-hmm.
And stage four then in our model is developing agreements, and pretty much in other models it's the same, finding solutions or developing agreements. In our model it's different because it's a byproduct or secondary to stage three. So if I'm in stage four and things are not going well, I know I've moved too quickly to stage four and I need to just back up a little bit and do some more empathizing or clarifying and finding out what the needs are. So I have a lot of passion for this model, and I do have a couple stories.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they would. It's hard to understand it abstractly. So I think if you give some concrete examples, it'd be great.
Well, the first one is a simple story. You know,
okay. It
can be simple mediations, and they can be really complex, even at the elementary level. I've had elementary students in for long periods of time, or I've had elementary students in for 10 minutes. So, and this particular mediation, our students at our elementary school, before school started, they stood outside their classroom. There was a door that allowed the kids to go in right directly into their classroom. They didn't have to come in the main building. So there was always a line before school started. And there was one little boy, this was a third grade class, one little boy was teaching the kids to dance the jerk. I don't know if you ever remember that dance, the jerk.
Mm-hmm.
But his brother had taught him how to do the jerk, and his brother was really, really good. And so he was teaching all these kids how to do this dance. Well, there was another student there that told him he was doing it wrong because his cousin had taught him how to do it, and his cousin taught him the right way to do it. And so this created, of course, a big fight, right? So now we've got this conflict, and the teacher's opening the doors, and we've got these two kids fighting. So they're sent down to me for mediation. So we're going through the stages and the steps, and at one point, I did this reframe, and this is stage three now. We've already done the safety. Everybody's told their sides, and now I'm in stage three, doing a little bit of a reframe here, and I'm saying, so your brother is really good at doing the jerk, and he taught you, and you wanted to make sure that you taught your classmates how to do it in the right way. Is that right? And he said, yes. And then I said to him and the other person, I'm talking to both of them, but you, your cousin taught you, and you, your intention was to help him teach the dance in the appropriate way. Am I right? And the one little boy looked at me and he says, I know what you're going to say next. And I said, no, what? And he said, you're going to say that we both are right. And I said, no, I wasn't going to say that, but wow, that's really intuitive of you. And then I had to explain, of course, what intuitive was because he didn't know. And from that point on, it was done. Really. We talked more about it and made agreements and did all of that. But there was, he understood. He got it. They both did.
So, the mediator, you, really understood in kid speak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that you knew how to reframe it, mm-hmm. to paraphrase what they were trying to do. And to be, and you made it more noble. They were trying to do it right.
Right.
Yeah, which ironically, of course, is exactly what they were fighting about. I'm right. No, you're wrong. I'm right.
That's right.
And so they found this commonality,
yeah.
which was that they were both right in their desire to be accurate.
Yes. Yeah, and it's fun. I mean, that was really fun mediation. So they, of course, went out happy. And if a little bit more difficult mediation,
yeah.
I was called by a teacher, and of course, she thought this was going to be a simple mediation. She had two kids fighting in the classroom, and she didn't want to send them out to recess because if she sent them out to recess, she knew what was going to happen on the playground. And so she said, can you just come down? I think this will be just a 10-minute short mediation. You'll be in and out, and I just need to get these kids on the playground. And so I went down, and I just went right into the classroom, pulled up some chairs, and she was sitting behind her desk. And so she was able – she is, by the way, a teacher that I also trained in mediation in our school. And so she had some understanding about the mediation process and then was able to watch this play out. And this is really an example of how trauma is played out in the classroom.
Oh, sure.
You know, it can be anything that they're fighting about, but really it is much more.
Yeah.
And so by the time we got to stage three in this particular conflict, one of the students was in tears talking about how when his mother was in jail, his grandmother was beating him and hitting him and abusing mm-hmm. him in all these different ways, and he was just sobbing. And the other little boy starts sobbing and talking about how he was mm-hmm. back and forth from his mom's house to his dad's mm-hmm. house to his mom's house to his dad's house, which was really difficult for him. And then these kids are just talking to one another, and I'm not really saying anything. I'm just allowing them to talk, creating a safe place for them. And by the time they were done, they were hugging each other.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's powerful. It's really, really powerful. And it allows them to create some awareness around their behaviors. So what was going on in the classroom, they're allowed to become aware of how difficult these conflicts get for them based on, you know, every time they come back to mediation, they realize more, a little more, and a little more.
So are you saying that they realize that their physical aggression towards each other came from growing up in abusive homes?
I think what they realize is that their behavior towards one another has been, yeah, triggered by that. I don't know that they fully realize it, like, in this one mediation, but it's a beginning for them.
Yeah.
They're just little.
Well, they might also know that they're, or kind of understand at a gut level, he suffers, I suffer, we're taking it out on each other.
That's exactly it, yes. And he didn't mean to do what he did, and I didn't mean to do what I did, and, oh, I understand why you did what you did.
Yeah. You're unhappy, too.
You're unhappy, too. Or you're hurting, too.
Okay.
And so then it all becomes okay. It's almost like a way of forgiving.
Yeah. And these are situations where they don't, you're not saying, okay, how can we avoid a fight in the future?
Mm-hmm.
Or with the jerk dance.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a future discussed. So in agreement-based...
Well, actually, that's not exactly true.
Okay.
Because in this model, one of the things that we talk about in the agreement stage, and sometimes as like a transition into the agreement stage is, you know, if a problem like this happened, because it stimulates their brain again, if a problem like this happened in the future between the two of you or even with someone else, how do you think you might handle it differently? And so now their little brains are being stimulated and those awarenesses, and they're allowed, they think about what they might do differently. Yeah.
So in both cases.
Both cases.
You would have done that teaching module where, or future, you know, have them think, what could they do differently?
Yes.
And what kind of things do kids say who get into physical altercations?
Oh, they say a lot of different things, and some might say, oh, you know, maybe I'll ask him first why he did that. Or, you know, maybe I'll, you know, if it's a name-calling situation, I won't call names. I'll tell them that what they said, I didn't like it,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, or it hurt my feelings, or mm-hmm. something like that.
Okay, so they do you coach them to come up with ideas?
Not really, but if kids are stuck and they mm-hmm. don't come up with ideas, it does happen sometimes, but not often. Usually they come up with something that they've talked about earlier, maybe in stage two or stage three. They'll come up with something that they've already talked about. But mm-hmm. if they're stuck, then the mediator doesn't throw out just one thing, because then it becomes the mediator's. The mediator will throw
True.
Out, well, two or three different things just to give them an idea. Or they might do a brainstorm with them. Well, let's brainstorm some of the things. What could somebody do? And so then both kids are participating together, and you've got a team effort going on there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any examples of working with adults?
You mean, well,
you know, any examples just like this, because I'm thinking how it just in your memory where you've worked with adults, you've worked with nurses or teachers, or Ray has worked, you know, any example.
Let's see, in our school we actually did student-student conflicts, student-teacher conflicts, teacher-teacher conflicts, parent-student conflicts,
mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think. I mostly did with kids, but we had, let's see, I really didn't.
Yeah. Anyways, if something pops up, don't worry about
it.
If something pops up, just interrupt me. But I'm wondering. I know you have been working around FASD, and I was wondering if mediation can be adapted for kids with special needs.
Yes, actually, in my experience, it is a wonderful modality for kids with special needs. And
we're talking cognitive, special cognitive.
Yeah.
Needs.
I mean, you know, people would think that they couldn't mediate, and sometimes somebody will come in and they truly can't mediate. But the process was always a good process to determine that and to see kind of where to go.
Yeah.
One mediation I did with a student who was making fun of a child on the autistic spectrum.
Yeah.
The student on the spectrum came in with his teacher, and he came in to do a mediation. And the student wasn't real verbal, and so the student on the spectrum actually did some drawings. And so we adapted it to drawing, and
mm-hmm.
he actually drew out the conflict, and the student who he had the conflict was, it was powerful because the student saw who he really was and the struggles that he had to go through just to communicate how he felt and what happened. And as the other student was watching him go through that process, he totally got it. you know, he walked over to him. I usually have them sit, and he got up out of his chair. He walked over behind him. He looked at the drawing. He asked the child to explain it to him. And then when they were done, he just put his arm around him and told him he was so sorry that he had called him that name.
Oh.
It was just, that was it.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of any time when there's been a difference, whether it's a racial difference, an ability-based difference, a male-female difference. When you get to know an individual more deeply, you develop compassion. But as long as they're at arm's length, and, you know, I'm thinking of black and white in America with our segregated communities, so, or native white, and, you know, racism. And often that is, it's almost a feedback loop. You have segregated neighborhoods and segregated social groups, and then that becomes more the other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you don't have that experience. One friend of mine who's worked a lot on legalizing gay marriage, what she said is that as attitudes liberalized, more and more people came out of the closet. And it was really hard because it was hard for people to remain prejudiced because they found out that their brother, their neighbor, their colleague, their best friend was gay.
Yeah.
And once you have that personal relationship, like the child who had insulted the individual with a disability, once he just had like 10 minutes with the kid,
yeah,
and saw the kid struggling,
right,
and saw his humanity,
yeah,
he stopped treating the kid as an object.
Yeah. They, you know, it becomes so real. It's just amazing. It's so powerful. I had another student who actually couldn't mediate, but this was a student who came into mediation, and I often did group mediations because this particular student always made everybody mad. He suffered. He actually was on the FASD, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. Spectrum, and one of the symptoms, I don't know, for FASD, for some children or people, is they appear to be lying all the time. But they're not lying. There's actually words for it. It's either fabricating or confabulating, or what they're doing is they're making up a story that makes sense to them to make it be, oh, it just makes sense to them.
Yeah.
And so he escalated conflicts all the time because everybody thought he was lying all the time. So we came in, we had like about four different people. They were all telling their stories. And during the process, he would get up out of his chair and he'd go put his arm around the one child telling the story. You're right. That's what happened. Then the next person would tell the story and he'd move to the next person, arm around the shoulder. You are right. That is what happened. And he went to all of them and said exactly the same thing. Well, of course, these kids are getting upset, right? Because he's lying. And we kind of went through that mediation, and it worked out just fine. But what I realized was that this student really couldn't do this process. So what it led to was a similar process in the classroom. What we did was we did a classroom intervention with not him in there. And when I did classroom interventions as a school counselor, I used this mediation process. We just did a group mediation. And so after I had parent permission to do this intervention and we had the child out of the classroom, you know, I would get the ground rules. I would get the rules. I would be a big deal with confidentiality and how examples of how they couldn't talk to people outside the classroom, how they couldn't even talk to each other after this. That if they had a problem or if things weren't working out, they needed to come down and see me, and I would help them. And I would always preface this with, I need your help. Your teacher and I need your help. We need your help.
Ah.
And so it was really empowering for them.
Yeah.
And the first circle, I would do a circle then, and it would be storytelling, you know, in a way. You know, what is it about this student that really bugs you or irritates you? Because, you know, they're getting mad at him all the time. And so they need to vent, too. And so they get to tell their story. And so the first round is them telling their story. Well, this particular one, nobody said anything about the lying. You know, it came all the way back around to me, and I said, well, does anyone in here think he lies? Every hand went up, you know, just whoom, right away. And so we talked about that. And we were talking a little bit. And then the next thing I do is after we've talked about what they think, we talk about the brain difference. How is that child's brain different than yours? And what is the difference in the chronological versus the developmental age? So I talk about how many of you have younger brothers and sisters. Well, are they irritating? Do they irritate you? Well, yes. Well, this is kind of a similar situation because really this person isn't nine. This person really is more like five or six. And so I'm in the middle of this process. Mm-hmm. You know, all of a sudden this kid wanders all over the school. So all of a sudden he's back in the classroom and I don't see him come in. But this other child sort of cues me and says, oh, hi. And he comes in and he says, what are you guys doing? And one of the kids in the group says, oh, we're just playing this ball game with Miss Pastorino. And he really covers, right? And so then they redirect this kid and take him back to where he was. And what an opportunity for me.
They became protective of him.
They became protective of him. And I was able to say, now, was that a lie? And we decided it wasn't. No, that's what made sense. That's what they had to say because that's what made sense. Then they got his lies, you know, and it really was powerful.
Wow.
Very powerful. And by the time we were done with our final circle, one of the children in the circle was saying, oh, so you mean this is the frontal lobe stimulation again. Oh, so you mean if we behave appropriately, he's going to copy us? I go, oh, my goodness, I hadn't thought of that, but what a great idea.
Cool. Oh, this is a perfect time to take a little break. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Alex Pastorino, a specialist in conflict mediation. And she's giving several examples of conflict mediation in schools. And I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and the program is called Mind Over Matter. But what we're going to do right now is take a short music break, and we'll be right back. And I'd like to talk to Alex about the kind of mediation possibilities that are available in Juneau. So let's hear some music.
A los bueyes y no extraño, vivo el año dando azotes. A los bueyes y no extraño, que a la conclusión del año, piña, mame y zapote. Traicionero, trabajo para el inglés, qué destino traicionero, sudando por un dinero que en mis manos no tendré jamás.
¿Cuándo llegaré?
Pronto, criatura.
¿Cuándo llegaré al bohío?
Triste vida la del carretero, anda por esos cañaverales, triste vida la del carretero, que anda por esos cañaverales, sabiendo que su vida es un destierro, se alegra con sus cantares.
Welcome back to Mind Over Matter. We're coming close to the close of our show. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and with me in the studio is Alex Pastorino, who is a mediation specialist, and we have been talking about examples in schools. And Alex, before we wind up tonight, just for a minute, could you tell us how does it work? Do you do mediation between couples, marital couples? How does it work?
Well, Elaine, it works the same. It's just a little bit more complicated. Kids don't have the defenses built up that adults have built up.
Oh.
And so it's a little bit more complicated. It takes a little longer with adults than it does with kids. Kids do this process so easily, and that's why it's so much fun. Adults have many more defenses, and however, it's a needs-based focus, and
yeah.
If you get to the needs and you help them to empathize with one another, it's really no different. The magic still can happen.
The magic still happens.
Yeah.
Well, we need to wind up tonight. The time has gone quickly, and Alex, thank you so much for sharing your expertise in the field of conflict mediation. And I'd also like to thank Martha Moore for contributing her technical skills to tonight's show. And certainly thanks to our listeners. Don't forget to join us next month on another Monday night at 7 p.m. on K2. Good night, folks.